There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Taffy have taken all 3 points with 3 goals against Celta Vigo's 1 full-time in Spanish La Liga. Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid. It is the Madrid derby from 6.15 this evening. Sorry, 7.15 local time here in the UAE. Over in the United Kingdom, half-time in the Championship. No goals between Borough and Leeds. What's happening in the Premier League? Mark Archer, Robbie Greenfield is here with the latest.
Well, Manchester United still 3-0 up against Fulham. Paul Pogba with 2 goals, the first and the third. The third coming from the penalty spot after Juan Mata was brought down. It was a little soft, but Manchester United won't care. They are 3-0 up and they are cruising on the 76th minute to yet another victory under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Cricket's just got underway over in the Windies. It is England against the West Indies. Third test match between these two. Windies have won the series. What's the latest, Mark Archer?
Yeah, this test match has just started. Day one, session one. West Indies won the toss. Thought that England, you haven't done well with a bat in the series so far, so you can have another bat. Five deliveries gone. England yet to score. It's no runs without loss after one over.
But Archie, can you tell the world who is opening the batting for England?
Yeah, I'll bring you up the scorecard here, but I think it's Rory Burns and your good friend Kenton Jennings.
I just don't get that. So you're not good enough to open the batting in second test. You get dropped. And then comes the test, you're good enough to open the batting.
There you go. Joe Denley will bat 3. Joe Root's
bizarre
position for 4. Butler, Stokes, Bairstow, Moen Ali, Mark Wood, Stuart Broad and the Burnley Lara, Jimmy Anderson batting 11.
What is going on with England cricket at the moment? What is their best batting lineup? Give us your thoughts by texting them to us now on 4001. We'll put them to our man, Owe Shah, who's alongside us at the moment. But also keeping an eye on those 7 o'clock kickoffs. Keep it locked here on Dubai Eye 103.8. We have 5 games in the Premier League kicking off at 7 o'clock. Watford against Everton, Southampton against Cardiff, Huddersfield against Arsenal, and Palace against West Ham. Any goals as they happen, you'll hear as they go in, you'll hear right here on Dubai Eye 103.8, courtesy of our dear friends over in the United Kingdom, TalkSport, because our feature game with them is Liverpool against Bournemouth.
It certainly is, and at Anfield, we can cross over to chat to him now, is TalkSport's Dan Wheeler. Dan, a very good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon to you.
Listen, Dan, the backdrop to this one is a nervous one for Liverpool fans, and it seems like the questions in the press conferences revolving around whether Liverpool are feeling the heat following consecutive draws in the Premier League. What's your overall take on this? I mean, they were 7 points clear as recently as mid-January, and of course now they are now behind Manchester City on goal difference, albeit with a game in hand. Is this a blip or is it something a little more sinister?
Yeah, good question. It's definitely a blip. You've only got to look at the last couple of results for that. I watched the West Ham game very closely and they were very fortunate to have come out of that game with anything, let alone a point, thanks to an assistant referee who was ball-watching rather than watching the last defender because Liverpool's goal was offside, so it could have been even worse for them. Jurgen Klopp will, of course, keep the composure in public. He'll keep the stony face. He'll keep the determination. That's not a surprise, but he wouldn't be human if he wasn't starting to feel the heat a little bit. He's saying this week that he doesn't need any help with dealing with the pressure. Again, that's not a surprise, but there's no doubt that whether you want to call it a blip or a slip or whatever you want, momentum has gone from Liverpool in the last 7 days or so. It's all with the defending champions, Manchester City, and for me, that is where now the title is going to be decided. It's a psychological battle more than anything else. It's between the ears. And who's got it? But the good thing is that we now have a really proper title race and it looks like it's going to be very exciting all the way to the end.
What's your take on where it started to go wrong for Liverpool, Dan? Is it just a tightening up? Is it a nervousness that's creeping into their play? They've struggled to keep clean sheets, which were really the hallmark of the opening couple of months of the season. Alisson and of course, Virgil van Dijk being outstanding in their respective positions. But following that 4-3 win over Palace, Liverpool just have looked a little suspect at the back, and Mo Salah has quietened up top as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've drawn the last two, as we know. 7 points have been dropped over the last 5 Premier League games. Interesting, you mentioned the goalkeeper. Obviously, he was the world record for a couple of days when he was signed from Roma in the summer. He still has 13 clean sheets, which is the most in the Premier League. But he has conceded 8 goals from his last 12 shots on target. When you consider it was only two from the previous 24 on target, you don't have to be a genius to work out that things have slipped a little bit from their previously very high standards with the goalkeeper. They've had, of course, some injuries as well. Joel Matip is the latest centre-half to come in alongside Virgil van Dijk. He's only started the last three games. James Milner was played at right back against West Ham and by all consensus had a fairly poor game, which is a bit of a surprise because he is Mr. Utility and he did excel for so long at left back for the Reds. But he's at right back again today. They have had some key injuries, Jordan Henderson, Gigi Wijnaldum and Alexander Arnold, but they all trained this week and all three of them are in the squad today. Wijnaldum will start. Henderson, their captain, is on the bench, as is Trent Alexander-Arnold. So it's starting to ease a little bit for Jurgen Klopp. It's still not a bad position, obviously, but now with them and City, I don't know, my feeling is that if I had to put money on it, I'd probably at this stage edge for City for no other reason that they've been there before and they know what it takes mentally more than anything else to close it out. Liverpool, particularly under Jurgen Klopp, so far have been bridesmaids, haven't they? They haven't quite managed to take the major prize. He's gotten to three cup finals across three different competitions, hasn't won any of them. So this is new territory for Jurgen Klopp and for this Liverpool side. And history also, maybe just cranking up the pressure on the German as well. This is his third full season at Anfield, and every other club he's been to, he's delivered at that particular stage. At Mainz, he took them into the Bundesliga for the very first time, and at Dortmund, he won the Bundesliga title as well. This is the third full season at Liverpool, so can he do it? Can he win the big one?
Let's look at today's visitors to Anfield, if we can, Dan, because Bournemouth were beaten very soundly on their own patch by Liverpool in the corresponding fixture. I recall Mo Salah had a particularly potent day in front of goal then, but they've been somewhat Jekyll and Hyde of late. They've thrashed Chelsea, they've lost to Cardiff, they've beaten West Ham. They've shown flashes of being a very good side, but what kind of Bournemouth do you expect to turn up? And will they be sensing the nervousness you feel at Anfield? And perhaps Eddie Howe will have said to his men, you know, this is an opportunity for us to actually capitalise on Liverpool's nervous disposition.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'll say that, Eddie Howe. He's a smart guy, excellent manager. But you're right, yeah, Bournemouth, who knows what sort of side will turn up today. Two wins and two defeats in the last four. They started the season fantastically, unbeaten in their first eight. I think they won half a dozen of those. But they have lost 10 of the last 15 Premier League matches. And their record at Anfield is wretched. They've never won there in six visits in all competitions. They've been beaten five times. And the last three times they've played Liverpool home and away, it's been a fairly bruising experience. They haven't scored a single goal and they've lost 4-0, 3-0 and 4-0. And away from home, it's where they've struggled, the Cherries. At the Vitality Stadium, they are obviously a different side. We saw that when they hammered Chelsea not so long ago, 4-0. But this problem on the road has to end at some stage, and they will know that Liverpool have shown signs of fragility, particularly against West Ham, particularly in the last two matches. And you're right, I think Bournemouth should go into this game absolutely thinking this could well be our best chance to take something from Anfield. And a point today would be massive, obviously not only for them, and for the further blow to Liverpool, and give a huge boost to Manchester City ahead of their game against Chelsea tomorrow.
Come on then, Dan, a prediction from you. Is it going to be going to form? Is Liverpool going to get back onto the winning road? Or is a shock? Can Bournemouth present or produce something in this game?
Well, after saying all that about Bournemouth, I don't think I'd be very surprised if they got anything today. I think Liverpool will clear their heads. I think at Anfield, they're much more comfortable. They're unbeaten in the last 33 matches on their own patch. So it's going to take some doing to try and stop them today, and I think they'll be hungry to make up for what was a very poor performance against West Ham. So I'm going for a home win, probably quite a comfortable one as well.
Every single Liverpool fan will be praying that you're right, Dan Wheeler. Listen, thank you so much. We look forward to hearing coverage and your commentary of that game live on Dubai 103.8. Thanks always for your time, Dan.
Yeah, pleasure. Good to speak to you.
Big thanks to Dan there for joining us live on the line. Do stay tuned, as Robbie was saying. From 7 o'clock this evening, you'll be able to hear Dan's commentary of that game. Liverpool looking to get back on track, back to the top of the table as well, against Bournemouth. Which Bournemouth will turn up? Well, Eddie Howe will certainly be hoping that it is the winning side of Bournemouth that do turn up. Let's get some more reaction now from Eddie Howe. He, during the lead-up to this game, has been talking about just how good Liverpool are.
I think it's just a season of football. You're going to get good spells, indifferent spells, but they're a top team with an outstanding manager. So I've got no doubts about their qualities and their ability to last the distance. I think it's going to be a fascinating end to the season for everyone connected who loves football, looking at from the outside in. But I think they're an outstanding team.
So those are the thoughts of Eddie Howe. Let's get some more thoughts from Eddie Howe now. He is the first one to admit that his team are going to have to spend large periods of this game defending to the hilt.
I think we've always proved that we can put our game together against these teams and produce some really strong performances. The results, that's always a difficult one to define. The Chelsea result for us was everything coming together with the result. There have been other games this season where I felt we've performed really, really well and just missed out. But yeah, if we can put it all together, as you say, defend well, we're going to have to in this game. We're going to have to defend well for long periods. But if we can show that mentality and desire to defend our goal, then I believe we'll have moments in the game that we can show what we're capable of the other way.
Eddie Howe there with his thought. I don't know, Robbie Greenfield. I've got a feeling. A few chicks
in
the armour.
I've got a wee feeling as well.
A wee feeling. Chicks in the armour of Liverpool. So much expectation. Yeah, on paper, stronger team for sure. Bournemouth, difficult though. Difficult opposition.
They can be. I mean, we saw them beat Chelsea 4-0. No one saw that result coming. So look, Bournemouth, 10th in the league, and they're very much... They're either a very, very good-looking side or they kind of don't show up, as we saw last week when they were beaten comfortably 2-0 by Cardiff. And as Dan mentioned, they're a very different proposition at the Vitality Stadium. They don't travel particularly well. Liverpool have an extremely good record against them. Mo Salah loves playing them. He, of course, has not scored in the last couple of games during those 1-1 draws for Liverpool. So he'll be looking to get back on the goal trail. And I'm with you. I've just got this sneaky feeling. And my fantasy football team reflects that, because I don't have Mo Salah. Chris McCarthy has captained him. And I will be watching this game through my fingers, not from a Liverpool point of view, but just in case Mo Salah runs rampant and Chris McCarthy manages to catch up to me in fantasy football. That's all I care about, Tom.
I mentioned earlier that I love listening in to Claudio Ranieri. Another man who lights up press conferences is, of course, Mr. Jurgen Klopp. What's he been saying in the lead-up to this game?
Let's hear from Jurgen Klopp now. And he's issued a rallying cry to fans and saying that it really is important that the fans do get behind the team.
Oh, I think I never left in doubt how much I appreciate the support and how much I believe in the help of support. So that's how it is. It's always a massive plus. But it's like it is. So I got asked a little bit about it after the last home game. I think about the support or something like that. There was nothing to moan about. It's like this. It was a kind of a nervy game. We had that before. That's how it is. You were 1-0 up, and then they scored a 1-1, and then it was a difficult game and all that stuff. So that's completely normal. So we know about the job. We know that we have to perform on highest level. We have to fight for every yard, and we have to really dig in and all that stuff. That's clear. And then our crowd is there. I'm not sure if I experienced yet that the supporters are there early. It's completely different to Germany, obviously. In Germany, they are 1.5 hours. A lot of them are already there. That's different, but I'm long enough here to get used to it. So that's no problem. But of course, would be nice. And I think that's when I said it. Now it's getting excited. That's how it is. And I can imagine. It was always clear that there will be games where you really have to keep your nerves. Everybody understand on the pitch, stuff like that. We had that in the past. We had that. We'll have that in the future. So that's part of the game. And so the good thing is we pretty much know all of us know what we have to do, what the job is to do. We on the pitch and the people in the stand. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I know it's a 3 o'clock kickoff. It's not that dark. that early anymore. It's not dark that early anymore. That's how it is. So I'm not sure if we need a floodlight still, but it can create an outstanding atmosphere. And I think everybody who saw matches in the past knows what atmosphere, how big the influence is.
Not sure if you answered the question there.
Yeah, look, I think the man is definitely feeling the heat. There's no doubt about it. And the more he says he's keeping everything calm and they're not nervous, the less I believe him. And Andrew Robertson was saying the same kind of thing. They're all insisting they are not nervous, but it's reflected in their play. There's no doubt about it. Against Leicester and against West Ham, Liverpool played nervous football, and we're just not used to seeing them do that. They buccaneered their way to a Champions League final last season. They played brilliant, high-octane, electrifying football. And in this new, more rigid structure, which is a little more defensively minded, and Dan made the point about Alisson coming off the boil and being a little bit more error-prone in the last couple of matches, that very much is the case, and they've started to look very suspect at the back. But speaking of Alisson, let's hear from the goalkeeper. I think this one is a translated interview, but he insists that they can win the league.
Well, I wouldn't say anything on the matter, really. Liverpool, we're going to keep working hard. We believe that we can win the league. We've shown in the past that we're good enough, and we're going to continue to show this in the games that are to come. Our approach is the same. We take things game by game, without worrying about what our opponents are doing. Everyone wants to win this league, and Liverpool are concerned for winning games, not dropping points. We don't think about Man City, we think about ourselves, we think about what we can do, and how are things are moving forward.
The media have been overreacting, as the media always do, but a former Liverpool player, Harry Kewell, he says that the team are still in a great position.
Everyone's talking about, you know, Liverpool not doing well at the moment, but the important thing is they're still picking up points, even in this little blip. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're playing bad, but you're still picking up points, that's a good thing. You know, because there's still plenty of games to go, and you know that they're going to turn this form around. So for me, I think they're in a great position at the moment.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Barasti's own 10-year challenge launches the 10th of February.
Full-time in the Premier League, and it is Manchester United that take all the points. They have won that one by 3-0. So, successful day for Manchester United fans. And Middlesbrough's day has just got a bit better as well. Borough have just taken the lead through a goal on 47 by Lewis Wing. That one against Leeds, but Leeds piling on the pressure now in the last 10 minutes or so. 63 minutes gone in that one. Middlesbrough 1, Leeds 0. Let's get over to Murrayfield now, or BT Murrayfield, as it's officially known these days. Mark Archer.
6 minutes gone. Scotland have taken the early lead against Ireland. It's been all Scotland so far, dominating possession, and they've also had a penalty right in front of the post converted by Greg Lainlaw. So as Ireland kick off after that penalty, after 7 minutes gone, it's Scotland 3, Ireland 0.
West Indies are playing England in the Test match, international Test match series between these two. It is the third and final Test match between these two. England are batting, aren't they, Arch?
They are indeed. Oh, he just brought it up on his little mobile phone there, a bit of TV coverage. But yeah, England are batting first. They're currently 5 without loss. Jennings has scored all the runs for England, all the 5, and Burns has yet to get off the mark. But yeah, England 5 without loss. West Indies have put England into win.
What are they going to do about this top order for England at the moment? Oweshara is alongside us, a man who's batted in that lineup on numerous occasions as well. Is there a problem at the moment, given a lot of the focus this year is going to be driven towards the World Cup and obviously the shorter format of the game? Is that going to be one of the issues you think that's affecting the Test match, the Test team at present?
I don't know if that's going to affect the Test team, but it's certainly going to be the focus right now, leading up to obviously this is the last Test match in the winter of the winter tours, and then obviously the England team sort of turned their focus to white ball cricket, and you know, we've got the huge tournament such as the World Cup coming up, and just talking about the World Cup, I really believe that in white ball cricket, we have a really, really good opportunity to go on and win the World Cup. I know in the past, you know, there's been a lot of talk about World Cup in regards to cricket and the England team. You know, we haven't sort of played that well in World Cups. But I tell you what, leading into this World Cup, if you look at the squad and the way they've played perhaps in the over the last, I don't know, 18 months, or nearly 2 years, the brand of white ball cricket England playing is unbelievable. And I back us to beat the likes of India.
But I wonder whether that, given that success and that huge that impetus at the moment, whether that is going to have an impact or is having an impact on the test. If there's too much focus on the one day, on the shorter format.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think, you know, England cricket team and the ECB take test cricket very, very seriously. Yes, and that's what I was trying to say earlier, is that the fact that the focus is going to be the World Cup, but then you got to remember Ashes coming up in the summer. That's, you know, that's right up there for English cricket, English cricket fans, the board, the players. You know, all players are desperate to play in the Ashes, so it's going to be a huge summer. I think we just have a problem right now with the fact that we, you know, our batting's not functioning. We have got a couple of very, very you know, top class fast bowlers, got Jimmy and Broadie I'm talking about here, but they're also slowly you know, approaching sort of you could call the end of their careers, and give it another couple of years, those guys might not be there. So we really have got an issue where the brand of cricket or the level of performance of the England cricket team, I mean, it's almost on decline at the moment.
Just going to break in there because there's been development over at BT Murrayfield. Let's get the latest from Mark Archer.
Yeah, first try of the match has been scored by the men in green. Ireland halfback Conor Murray has gone over. It was a kick and chase down the left-hand touchline. It was recovered by a Scottish player who then threw an absolute shocker of a pass to the Scottish fullback. He missed the ball. Conor Murray wasn't a hand to pick the ball up and bundle himself over. So yeah, kick and chase, up and under. It was a foot race for the loose ball, gathered, and it was just a terrible, terrible piece of play by the Scottish winger. It's meant that Conor Murray has gone in for the first try of the match. Conversion to come, but it means Ireland now lead 5-3.
We have got golf being played all over the world. You've got action over in the States at Pebble Beach, and also down in Australia as well. The ISPS Handa Vic Open taking place in Australia. Before we get on to leaderboards there, can you try and, I know that he was mentioned a little bit earlier on, but this act of petulance by a certain Sergio Garcia, not many miles from here, down at the Saudi International recently, has got a lot of press throughout the week. For those that aren't au fait with the story at the moment, tell us what happened.
Well, what happened is Sergio Garcia lost the plot, first in a bunker and then subsequently on some of the greens, but he threw a tantrum in a bunker, the like of which I've not seen in quite some time. He swished his club. He dug the club into the sand and started almost like a child that has been told they can no longer play in the sandpit, started sort of heaving the sand out of the bunker. He then threw the club out of the bunker, stomped out. He said some colourful language in his native Spanish, of course, that was picked up on the TV and was apologised for. And subsequently, in a continued petulance, he actually damaged some of the greens with the sole of his shoes and also with his putter, which is the more egregious of the crimes, because what he did in the bunker was petulant, but it didn't really affect anyone else. But those playing behind him were potentially affected by the damage that he was causing to the putting surfaces. So he was disqualified from the tournament and he issued an apology, and the European Tour attempted to brush the entire incident under the carpet. They said that what was done was done. He'd been disqualified from the tournament. He'd apologised. Water under the bridge. We move on. Now, there was a certain feeling among a lot of people that the penalty and the punishment for his actions should have perhaps been, given the fact he's such a high-profile player, given the fact that golf doesn't need that kind of press, that perhaps an example should have been made of that conduct to make it very clear that it's not acceptable, and maybe a heavy fine and maybe even a ban, some were talking of. But at the end of the day, his playing partners spoke up in kind of defence of Sergio Garcia. Robert Rock, who was playing behind him, said that he wasn't bothered, that it was all done and dusted, and let's put it to bed and move on. So that was the way that the golf world wanted to treat it, and that was the way that ultimately it was dealt with.
Archie, I know that this is something you wanted to talk about as well. Do you think that there should be a line written under this, or do you think there should be more action?
No, I think he should be punished. I think the governing body of the sport, the European Tour, should set an example. This is a terrible piece of behaviour by one of the top-ranked players in world golf, a icon of European golf, a golfer that a lot of people look up to. He's been around for 20 years, and it's not as though he didn't know better. He's behaved like a sport child, and he should be punished accordingly. They need to set the standards. They need to govern the game. They need to grow a pair and make a decision on this. And I just don't think it's good enough to let a player get away with this type of behaviour on the golf course. And we've seen examples. We've talked about them on the show a little bit earlier. We've seen Jason Holder, the captain of the West Indies team, banned for a match by the ICC, the global governing body, for his team, not him, but his team having a slow over rate. We've seen in the last week, Safriz Ahmed, the Pakistani captain, banned for a racist comment that he made and apologised for in a one-day international. We've seen that 12 months ago, three Australian cricketers banned by their national governing body for ball tampering and conspiracy of ball tampering and bringing the game in disrepute. I just don't see how it equates that Sergio Garcia should get off scot-free. And for me, it just doesn't sit right. I know he's a private contractor, and we can create all sorts of arguments about why something hasn't happened, but for me, it's just not good enough, Robbie.
Well, look, it's very much the modus operandi of golf to steer clear of any controversy and to really be a neutral. The thing about it is the European Tour doesn't want to be the arbiter of fines and penalties. It wants to be the organiser of tour events. This is the thing. It doesn't want to get involved in perhaps the finer points of etiquette that its players have to be withheld to and the account that they have to be held to. So I think in other sports you would have seen action taken. As you mentioned, golfers being individual contractors essentially and not really just being behoved to their own behaviour and their own selves when it comes to their career. That's the line it's taken, and look, I mean, I'm sure we won't see anything of the like again this season, because it did attract an awful lot of negative headlines, and I'd be surprised if Sergio Garcia is throwing his clubs in the next tournament. I really would.
But who's to say another player won't do that, because they know they can get away with it?
Quite possibly.
You know what I mean? And all of a sudden...
I certainly think with the damage of the greens, I don't know how bad that damage was. I don't know whether this was just a tiny scuff mark or whether he actually took a chunk out of the green or not. So it really does depend on the severity. But he was disqualified from the tournament. He was punished for that action. And I don't know that a sport like tennis, if a player had taken a chunk out of the Wimbledon turf, they'd have been disqualified. But I don't know whether they'd have been fined. So I'm not entirely sure on that. I don't think it's something that needs to be made an example of necessarily.
In your opinion then, Robbie, you're a man that's followed the golf world very closely for a long time. Should he be banned? Should he be fined and then banned on a global basis for one tournament or 2 weeks?
No, he shouldn't be banned. I don't think so. Look, I mean, players in tennis break rackets almost on a matchly basis. You know, you see a tournament, I can't imagine a tournament goes by when a player doesn't shatter a racket. They get a code violation. There's a system in place. If they argue with the umpire, if they abuse the umpire, as we saw at the US Open with Serena Williams, there's a chain of command in place.
Isn't it a bit different? Isn't it like, I mean, you wouldn't get banned for breaking one of your clubs, would you? Because
no,
it's to your disadvantage. So if you're using the tools of your trade. But I think the issue here is the fact that he had this act of petulance or so say, which had an effect on the players that were coming up behind him. Because if he was upsetting a playing surface, not just for him, but it was everyone else who was driving into that.
And imagine if one of those players had been in contention and one of their putts to win the tournament was affected by the damage he did to the greens. And what I'm saying is, should there not be a code of conduct? I mean, we talk about this great game of golf where the etiquette and the players are self-policing. Shouldn't there be a code of conduct which says, if you throw a club, this will happen to you? If you damage a green, or you damage five greens, not talking about one green, five greens, on purpose, he knew what he was doing five times, then you receive a penalty, and that penalty is very clear. You either receive a ban or a fine and a ban. It's very straightforward to me.
Well, to these guys, a fine, as we all know, a fine is pittance to these guys. So,
hit them where it really hurts. Yeah. Ban them.
Well, exactly. That would be that strikes me as, for what he did, scuffed a couple of greens. That strikes me as a little bit extreme. I get your point. I know what you're saying, but the reality of it is that what he did not affect the players behind, because the players behind commented on it and actually spoke out in defence of Sergio Garcia. So it seems, and We should ought to break away, really, because Ireland yeah. scored another try.
I know that we were expecting this Ireland comeback, that's for sure. Mark Archer's got all the latest for us there.
Yeah, second try of the match has gone to the Irish winger. I think it's Jacob Stockdale has found a seam up the middle of the pitch. He's shown a burst of speed. It's just come off the ruck. It's a switch ball, and he's coming off the opposite wing, and he's just found an open seam there in the Scottish defence, and he's bundled his way under the post, untouched almost from halfway. It's a great try, great set play. I would suspect from Ireland. It's an inside pass from Johnny Sexton. Stockdale's taken the ball with pace. He's found the gap, and he's gone under, untouched almost, under the Scottish goal line there. So with 16 minutes gone, this kick will be converted by Johnny Sexton. It'll be Ireland 17, Scotland 3.
Just one final point. I know we were talking golf just then and Sergio Garcia's conduct, and he is one of the top players on the European Tour. We're in a time right now where the European Tour is very conscious of keeping its star players as happy as possible. Yeah. And that is just the reality. Look, the PGA Tour could probably administer a punishment like that with a little bit more impunity, knowing that the top players will always come back to play on the PGA Tour. At the moment, we've seen with Rory McIlroy and his very outspoken decision to pretty much can his European Tour activity for most of this season. He's only planning on playing a handful of events. And the prime players, the top players, of which Sergio Garcia is one, the European Tour needs them on that tour. And I can't imagine that in that boardroom, if they were ever discussing this, that wouldn't have come up as well.
Finally, after two abysmal test matches for England cricket fans, some good news from the West Indies, Ace, because you've been monitoring the feed. What's happened over there?
It's raining!
It is raining over in the West Indies. England have not lost a wicket. I think it's 5 without loss. Is that there?
It is, and it's going to go all 5 days.
The monsoon's come in. So we'll have more from Owen Shah in just a few moments' time. You're listening to Dubai I-103.8. We're going to take a short break when we come back. Building up to our 7 o'clock kickoffs, we'll tell you what's happening in the Six Nations and much, much more.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Barasti's own 10-year challenge launches the 10th of February.
You're listening to Dubai on a 3.8. You are listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from the rooftop garden down here at Barasti. It's myself, Robbie Greenfield, Mark Archer, and the former England and Middlesex mayor, Mr. Owen Shah, alongside me up here on the rooftop. We are watching the Six Nations on the big screen. Mark Archer's watching on intently. What's the latest?
Yeah, we saw Scotland go to a 3-0 lead, but Ireland have now fought back with two quick tries in succession. The first one to Conor Murray. It was a kick and chase. It was a terrible pass gathered by Tommy Seymour, the Scottish winger. He threw a shocker to the other winger, Sean Maitland. Maitland missed the ball, and who was on hand? It was the man. Conor Murray went over for the first try. Johnny Sexton couldn't convert it. And then we've just seen a brilliant piece of back play, which has seen Jacob Stockdale, the Irish winger, score his 13th try in 16 test matches. That's a heck of a great record. It was a pop pass back from Johnny Sexton. Who took the ball on the inside? It was Stockdale, and he went over from 50 metres out. Outstanding try, and it was Conor Murray that actually added the extras because Johnny Sexton's got a dead leg. Big blow for Scotland, though, because Stuart Hogg has limped off he's had a tweak. So Blair Kinghorn, last week's hat-trick scorer, is on, but Scotland have had to reshuffle their back line as well. So Scotland up against it here. After 20 minutes at Murrayfield, it's Ireland 12, Scotland 3.
Thanks much indeed to Raj getting in touch with us a little earlier on. He wanted to send all his condolences to those that were lost in the Flamengo fire, and also condolences to the families of the pilot in the Emiliano Sala story, which we spoke about a little earlier on. Thanks also to Adil for putting us right on Elite Honesty and all that. And of course, Clark Francis as well, who has texted in. He's listening on at the moment. He must have his work cut out ahead of the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship, which gets underway a week on Monday.
There today, Tom.
Were you?
Yeah, I was. I was having a hit with the top 30 under 14 player
Why
in the world.
Why did you do that to yourself?
I consoled myself with the knowledge of that when she beat me 4-love in a curtailed set. But
I love that.
Really,
four games.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, is that the hammy? That was the hammy, wasn't it?
Clark was watching on, and I think he'd seen enough after four games. But Steffi is her name, Romanian young girl who's been at the academy since she was 6 years of age, and she has a very, very bright future. She's already top 50 in the world, top 30 in Europe for her age bracket, so we'll be keeping a close eye on her. But the ball kids going through, being put through their paces ahead of the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship.
Well, obviously he's got one eye on that one. He's also got one eye on his beloved Borough as well, because Clark Francis has been texting in saying, up the mighty Borough, how are they doing?
They are ahead, 82 minutes on the clock, and Middlesbrough, who are down in fifth place in the championship, taking on the high-flying second place Leeds United. Lewis Wing, the man, the striker, to get on the score sheet. George Friend cut the ball back, the midfielder. Lewis Wing fired into the net. And Middlesbrough on the cusp of upsetting Leeds United, albeit at home. And this championship, it just continues to get tighter and tighter at the top, Tom.
I just want to go back to the Sergio Garcia story, because obviously getting a lot of comments coming in on that one as well. Some suggestion as well in the media at the moment that Sergio Garcia, following his act of petulance last week, could look to someone like a Ricky Fowler as well. Two sort of very different stories coming from two different worlds, the two parts of the world and the two different tours in the world of golf last week. Sergio Garcia, we talked about there. Ricky Fowler, I mean, coming back from the edge of adversity to win that extraordinary tournament. Again, tell us the story there.
Yeah, look, he had a bit of a disaster. He had to drop several times on a single hole, and you know, he fell behind, having basically been in charge of the tournament down at the Waste Management at the Phoenix Open. And Ricky Fowler, the coolest of customers. There has sometimes been a tendency to question whether he's got the mettle to win a major championship. He's been the bridesmaid a few times in major championships. He's no longer the next big thing. He's 30 years, I think, of age, is Ricky Fowler. He's part of the Rory McIlroy generation, and he hasn't won one yet. And I think that's playing on his mind. He is a player's champion. But the question for Ricky Fowler and his coaching team, I know he's in the Harman stable. Claude Harman III looks after the game of Ricky Fowler. And let's see if he can go ahead now and use that form, use that victory down in Arizona to go ahead and win a major this time around. Because, as you say, coping with adversity and finally pulling out of the bag in an incredible finish, it was pretty exciting. As is the tournament taking place over in Pebble Beach this week, Tom, because I can tell you history was made on the links of Pebble Beach, or at least it was according to Phil Mickelson. He's just joined Instagram, by the way, and Phil, like yourself, Tom, he's a recent convert of Instagram.
He's got a few more followers.
It's Phil Mickelson, and he's hilarious. He is absolutely hilarious. He's parading around in his trademark flip-flops and buttoned-up shirt playing golf. And he said, in the first time of his career, first round at Pebble Beach was the first time he'd ever hit all 14 fairways. Lefty, of course, not a man known for his accuracy off the tee, but he is tied for the lead. It's a five-way tie for the lead at 10 under par. Mickelson, Lucas Glover, Scott Langley, Jordan Spieth back to form. Nice to see him back in the fray. And Paul Casey, all at 10 under par at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Jason Day in the thick of it as well on 9 under. So a high-quality leaderboard over there in the US.
We've also got golf down in Australia as well. The ISPS Handa. This is down in Victoria, isn't it? The Vic Open or something like that.
Yeah. This just goes to show as well how weird golf is, because the guy that made 9 birdies in a row and set tied Mark Calcavecchia's long-held world record, I think that dates back to the 1990s, a guy called James Nitties. I can tell you that subsequently, having made those 9 birdies in a row, on his third round, he made 4 bogeys and just 1 birdie, and he made a treble bogey in his second round. So he's gone 2 over and 3 over, having shot 8 under in the first round, and he's gone into reverse. I'm not sure why I'm dwelling on this, because he's tied for 62nd in this tournament, but it just goes to show, 9 birdies in a row, and he's barely at the top. I mean, he's literally right down near the bottom of the field, but it's Wade Ormsby, the Australian, the local lad, who's 2 under for the day. He shot a 70 to finish at 15 under, and he is 2 clear of Callum Shinquin. What a couple of weeks it's been for the Englishman. If you recall, at the Desert Classic, he qualified via the MENA Tour qualifier at Dubai Hills, shooting a 64. He went on to finish well and high up the leaderboard in the Desert Classic, and he's playing well in Australia again. So, again, just a very strange game. It's impossible to predict who's going to have a good week. Matthew Steiger, 13 under. Justin Harding, another player who did well at the Amiga Dubai Desert Classic, he's carried that form through, 12 under in a group with David Law and Brad Kennedy.
Interesting that you just talk on the Vic Open there, Robbie. I don't know if you've seen the format or dug into the format, but it's actually a joint sanctioned event with the LPGA and obviously the European Tour and the Australasian Tour. And they're playing over two courses, the men and the women, and then they're making a cut, and also then they're playing sort of a simultaneous event within one event. So it's quite a unique format. I think that's great, in particularly for the LPGA women players to get the joint TV coverage, to get the bigger crowds, to sort of share the spotlight, so to speak, for that particular event, and maybe sort of a blueprint for the future for some of those female events.
Right here in the Middle East, we're going to have in a month or two's time, Jordan, the Isla Golf Club down there, the home of the MENA Tour from the starting point, the Q School, and the home of the MENA Tour finale, which will take place later on this year. But they are hosting the first ever cross-tour event whereby players from different tours are competing against one another. You've got the LET, the Ladies European Tour, you've got the European Seniors, and you've got the Challenge Tour players all playing for the same purse on the same course, but just off different tees. So we're actually going to answer that question, and it's a very smart move because you can see that making mainstream news for golf. Are the women really better than the men? Who's actually the better set of the two sexes? That will be the backdrop to this conversation. But if a female player wins that tournament, imagine what that will do for the ladies' game, albeit off a forward set of tees, but same conditions, same greens, same everything else. Just they want to design it so they're all hitting the same club in. So if it's a 5-iron for the men, it's going to have to be a 5-iron for the ladies and, of course, the seniors as well. So really interested to see how that event takes shape. And I'm hearing good things about the progress of the course and the club in preparing for that event.
Right, we're going to take a short break, our final break, then we'll come back, we'll get around the grounds, and we'll get ready to hand over to Talk Sport for live commentary of Liverpool against Bournemouth. And then straight after that, your 9:30 kickoff as well.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Points are plenty in the rugby, and a big cheer going up as well from the Scotland faithful as Scotland go over the white line for the first time in this one. That reduces the deficit a couple. So Scotland's first try sees Ireland's lead reduced to just 12 points to 8 is the score at the moment. Two tries to Ireland, one try to Scotland, but Scotland bouncing back. Mark Archer.
Yeah, great try from Scotland. It's been a great half of rugby so far. Plenty of action end-to-end. It's a great move from Scotland. Inside ball again. And I think it's Hugh Jones, the centre, has gone all...
Johnson, I think, number 12.
Oh, Sam Johnson is the one who's finished off the try, but it was a break by Hugh Jones. He stepped past the Scottish midfield. He's gone all the way, almost to the line. He's dragged down just short of the line there, but Sam Johnson, backing up like any other good player should be, has taken the pass and bustled over, and that's made it a really interesting match. Scotland scored first, laid all the penalty, two tries in close succession to Ireland by Conor Murray and Jacob Stockdale, and then Sam Johnson has just bustled over. So with conversion to come after half an hour at Murrayfield, it's Ireland 12, Scotland 8, and the kick, I can tell you, if we wait just for another 15 seconds, it's Greg Lainlaw lining it up from the touchline, and he has successfully made the conversion. So 30 minutes gone at Murrayfield, Ireland 12, Scotland 10, plenty to play for.
Italy against Wales straight after that one, 8:45 kickoff, that's been shown down here at Barasti, and then tomorrow 7 o'clock, looking forward to this one, first game of the tournament at Twickenham. It is England against France. It is Le Crunch. That's tomorrow, and one man who has caught the eye of Eddie Jones is Chris Ashton. He's back in the mould at the moment. He's in the starting 15 tomorrow.
I just maybe think, I mean, Eddie hasn't spoke. Me and Jack have a good relationship, and we're probably very different players. Jack was outstanding last week against Ireland, so yeah, we just offer different things, and I don't think there's much in it, to be honest.
He said it was almost a gut instinct, and the fact that you have a little bit more understanding maybe of the way these French guys play, having spent a year out there, might just have given you the edge. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, it could be. But you never know. But I'll take it.
You're not
questioning. I'm happy to be started. Yeah, I'm not questioning. Hopefully the opportunity and Eddie's got feelings right and I do get a couple of chances.
Also tomorrow, you've got plenty to look forward to in the Premier League. Early game is Tottenham against Leicester. That one getting underway at 5.30 tomorrow afternoon. And then an intriguing game after that, 8 o'clock tomorrow evening, City against Chelsea.
Yeah, certainly is. And it'll be a chance for Manchester City again to keep the pressure. We don't know what Liverpool are going to do at home to Bournemouth in the next couple of hours or so. But if they do slip up, Manchester City will be looking to win against Chelsea and maintain the pressure. We saw the impact Gonzalo Higuain, the new January signing, had for Chelsea. 2 goals for him, 2 goals for Eden Hazard the last time out, but they were beaten 4-0 by Bournemouth in their previous game. So Chelsea just lacking consistency under Maurizio Sarri. He's been speaking in the build-up to this game, Tom, and he has in no doubt as to which is the leading side in Europe right now.
Gonzalo is a great player. He is a great striker. He did very well in Madrid, in Naples, with Juventus. Probably we didn't do very well in Milan. But he arrived really very motivated. And so that I think that he will be very useful for us. He can score, of course. But he is really very able to play with the teammates.
Well, that is Maurizio Sarri's thoughts on Gonzalo Higuain. Let's get his thoughts on their opponents, Manchester City.
No, at the moment, I don't think so. I think that we will be able to fight for the top four. In this season, no more, I think. We can win something, of course, but in Premier League there is a fighting between Liverpool and Manchester City. I think you know very well my opinion. At the moment, Manchester City, in my opinion, is the best team in Europe. I know very well that it's very difficult to win the Champions League. Because if you have to play in Premier League, it's very difficult to get the final in other competitions. But at the moment, in my opinion, they are the best team in Europe.
Maurizio Sarri, he will be in charge tomorrow. City against Chelsea promises to be a cracker. Stay tuned. You've got Liverpool against Bournemouth. Just enough time for us to wrap things up. Lots to look forward to over the coming weeks on Dubai I-103.8. Got the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship week on Monday getting underway. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully Naomi Osaka will be fit to attend that one. And we've got the Pakistan Super League starting next week as well. Oh, Shah alongside us as he has been throughout the entirety of the show. Looking forward to watching a few of those games?
Yeah, very much so. Exciting. It's going to be some good stuff. And I think they're trying to get a few more games played back in Pakistan.
Yeah.
Look, it's a big, real big effort from Pakistan trying to slowly, trying to get some more cricket being played. But and I believe that this year they're going to play the final, the semi-final, and perhaps the quarter-final even in Pakistan. So that will be quite interesting how things go out there.
Interesting to see how it goes. Good confirmation that Islamabad United, Karachi Kings, Lahore Qalandars, the Multan Sultans, Peshawar Zalmi and Quetta Gladiators will all be taking part in the tournament this year, which gets underway officially next week. So we'll have more details for that right here on Dubai Iwinner 3.8, 14th of February all the way through to the 17th of March with a whole host of international talent in town. Talking of international talent, Robbie Greenfield, thank you very much indeed for all your efforts this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Let's go and watch some football.
We'll watch that indeed. Stay tuned. You've got Liverpool against Bournemouth coming up. Marky Archer's going to keep an eye on the rugby for us as well. Keep us updated at the Kiwi Oracle.
Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah, 5 minutes to go at Murrayfield, the first of today's two Six Nations matches. And I can tell you it's Ireland 12, Scotland 10. Get on down to Brasty for the second half. It's going to be a cracking finish.
And of course, huge thanks to former England top order batsman, the one and only O.A. Shah as well. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend, Ace, and thanks for joining us.
No worries, thanks for having me.
Much appreciate the thoughts and the time of Owe Shah, as of course to all of you. Stay tuned, you've got Dan Wheeler coming up next. He's got live commentary of Liverpool against Bournemouth, so stay tuned for that one. And then stay with Dubai I-103.8 straight after that. Brighton against Burnley will follow.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.